a shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 304. Okay, so this is, fair warning, this is an early morning episode. And so you're going to hear this sound a lot here, this sound right here. Ah, that is the sound of me drinking delicious Commonwealth coffee. This is the Colombia Nariño Potosí Las Acacias. Sí. That's a mouthful, huh? Colombia Nariño Potosí Las Acacias. It's so funny when you hear words that you don't know where they come from. And where I grew up at, there is a town that that a lot of my friends lived in, because my best friend from elementary school lived in our school, but he went to school at that school because his dad was the coach there. And it was called Potosí, right? Shout out to Matt Bradley. And Potosí, yeah. And so it was like, I don't know. It's a Spanish word. Well, why is there a Spanish word in the friggin' middle of Missouri? I mean, it's like, it's in Podunk, Missouri, Washington County. And the people who settled there are mostly like kind of French Creole kind of people out in the mountains and stuff. It's pretty crazy. There's some communities out there in Washington County until not too long ago that were so cut off that there was still kind of like a Creole dialect spoke. And there was just like, there's some sketchy stuff going on out in the hills there, man. But anyway, Potosí, it's like, well, how am I supposed to know that that's a Spanish word that has, was it San Luis de Potosí? Or is that, there's cities in Spain and in Mexico named that. I had no idea. Well, evidently there's other things named that, because this coffee that I'm drinking is Colombia Nariño Potosí Las Acacias. So there you go. Delicious. Shout out to Commonwealth Coffee. Jason Farrar roasted this coffee. You are a master, my friend. All right. Weekend recap. Sorry, didn't get a show yesterday. It's been kind of a crazy week. The schedule's all mixed up because two of my three employees are out of town. So my schedule's all kind of different than it normally is, and it kind of threw everything off. And quite honestly, I came down to where I work. I had to work early in the morning. I didn't get to record Sunday night, and I forgot my gear. I thought my gear was in the, I was in the boot, of my car. I thought it was in my trunk, you know. It wasn't. It was someplace else. It was in my room, in my office next to my desk. So, yeah, so you didn't get a show, and I apologize. So, early morning episode, weekend recap. Man, Friday chewed me up and spit me out, man. It was just brutal. Just so much stuff going on, so much work stuff going on, so many projects that's going on. Totally was supposed to call a friend and a client about a project after my big, I had a huge meeting on Friday afternoon, the budget stuff we're working on and stuff. Did so much work for that and was just like exhausted. Got through that, exhaled, and totally forgot to call. I felt like hell. It's like, making that up this afternoon. So, you know, this weekend, I attempted to just kind of float this weekend, you know? It's like coming into Holy Week and, you know, Friday night, a bunch of people were going to the art walk, and I'm like, I don't really want to go to the art walk. I just don't, I'm just not into that. So, you know, I just kind of hung out this weekend and just try, I did my best to try to do some, kind of some big picture thinking about Calyx, maybe read some books, try to leave the phone off a lot, and just kind of like not have any real set plan, just kind of like float around, drink some coffee, get some work done, you know, on Saturday, maybe just read some books on Sunday and hang out. And, you know, kind of like my drive back from Kansas, kind of like me and my my story about the lake up in Lander. I just couldn't get myself stilled. I was just restless. I was like, I get in these modes, and I don't know if anybody else does this, where, you know how when you're hungry for something, but you don't know what it is, and you're like, I'm hungry. No, that doesn't sound good. Well, let's just get, no, we could make some, no, it doesn't, no, that's not it, you know? You're just, there's something in particular that you're longing for, something you're trying to find, you know, but you can't get it, you know? So picture that, except like, you know, like with kind of your, a broader perspective on your life. It's like, it's kind of, I get in these moments where I just kind of catch myself driving around. Like I'm going to go, I drive, I'm going to go to Thump and I'm going to sit in the corner, drink refills. And it's like, no, that's not what I want some community. Yeah, I'm just going to go. That's what I want. I'm going to go to Amethyst and I'm going to drink coffee and see if anybody I know is there. No, that's not really. I just want to go home and kind of, no, man, I don't want to be at the house. Maybe I'll go to the shop. And then I'm like, you know, I go to my shop and then I get here and it's empty and it's quiet and I could kind of like get some coffee and work. And I'm like, no, this isn't it. It's like I had that weekend where everywhere I went, I was like, no, that's not where I'm trying to be. Everything I tried to do, I was like, nah, this just doesn't feel like the right thing to be doing. And I just couldn't get it together all weekend. I tried to get some work done. I got some work done. I tried to read some books. I read some books, but, you know, it just wasn't, it's just kind of unsettled. It's really unsettled. I'm super unsettled right now. I'm really confused about a lot of stuff in my world, and there's just a bunch of cool opportunities, but it's time to pull the trigger on some certain things, and just, you know, and also kind of regret, too. Regret was kind of haunting me over the weekend. You know, about 6 months to a year ago, I said to myself, I started looking into buildings for a prototype for Calyx, and I said to myself, I said, you don't have enough money to rent a building right now. You don't have enough support. And so any of these buildings that are open are not going to be open when you actually have them. So just kind of get a feel for what things cost, what's available, and then start working and praying and start fundraising and getting things ready, you know. And then right when you get everything together, then pray that the right building shows up, right? And I kind of have my, I was really wanting to get as close to Denver, University of Denver as possible. But there's just very few slots that are kind of within clean walking distance of the University of Denver. They don't change very often. And so, and there's also another particular space, like a little section right near a bunch of apartments, right near some other things kind of clear, kind of near Our Lady of Lourdes. There's a little section right next to the wine store that I go to, Divino. And I've always kind of thought that would be a really great location. I really like that location. And it'd be it's a good set of businesses right there. There's tons of new apartments right nearby. Really young demographic, close enough to the university that students would study. And so I just kind of got busy working on everything else and trying to figure out, do I want to file a nonprofit? Do I not want to? And I didn't pull the trigger on that. And then now so two things happened. A building right next to University of Denver at Old Noodles opened up. It's been a restaurant. So it would be so easy to turn into a cafe. And it's right there. It is a great location, really close to the Illegal Pete's and the original Chipotle and Jelly. And I'm not ready for it. I didn't do the work. I didn't have the faith to dig. You know, it's like in the Old Testament when they're in this drought, they're in a drought for forever, and the prophet comes and he says, dig. There's water going to come. Just dig. Right? And so each person had to dig. And however much you dug, then water came out of nowhere, and then however much you dug, that's how much you got. You know, everybody got filled. God showed up and filled everyone's bucket, so to speak. The question was, how big a bucket did you dig? If you'd have dug an Olympic-sized swimming pool, you'd have had an Olympic-sized swimming pool amount of water. If you dug like a thimble, you got a thimble. But everybody was full, right? You know, digging during the drought is just one of the hardest things in the world, and it's one of the lessons that I've had to learn over and over again. And so over the weekend, and then the second thing was that building down there by Divino opened up. And it caused me to really question. I had really decided to do a very simple, very, very simple, very, very, very small, very, very anyone could reproduce it kind of model in Denver. No big classroom stuff that I've been wanting to do. Just a super clean, just a coffee house, nothing else. And then move on from there. And then this building opens up. Hardwood floors, exposed brick walls, beam ceiling. And it's 3,000 square feet with a 1,200 square foot basement, which would make a good wine cellar and storage. And it's the perfect space and shape for the big, big vision. And I was just like, now I'm like, okay, I should have dug even harder. I should have dug for a bigger vision. And I should have did this. So I'm just trying to go, okay, now look, maybe this wasn't the real one. Maybe this was just a nudge. This was a, you know, this is destiny giving me a little body check just to remind me, hey, you're supposed to be digging. Maybe this isn't the real flood. You know, maybe the real water didn't come. Maybe this is just reminding me. So that kind of thing was haunting me over the weekend. I was having a 30,000 foot unsettledness over the weekend. I had no intention of making this anytime soon. All right, let's go to the break, and we'll get back. I want to finish some things up and then move on to some ideas. You're listening to The Camera Position.
I'm a sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. See, only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley. I went humble 2 times in a row. Mea culpa. Mea culpa, John Koontz. I mean, John's going to just like text me and be like, you said humble host 2 times in a row. I'm totally jerking his chain. He doesn't sound anything like that. Hey, that's my voice for anybody who texts me about funnishness. Hey, I don't like what you did. That's just a universal voice for anyone who has a problem with something I said on the show. So anyway, when we were going to the break, I was talking about being unsettled over the weekend and just cool opportunities making me realize that I wasn't ready and making me regret not being ready. So that's what got in the way. So I did end up, so Sunday I went to Mass over to Our Lady of Lourdes, and it was kind of cool. I was sitting next to Ducky, you know, sitting next to the duck, and he's my friend and my roommate. But within 2 pews of us was the Funsteins, Greg and Rebecca Funstein, and then Alyssa, who's married name I can't remember, and they both went to Thomas Aquinas College with me. Now, existing in Denver as a TAC-er is kind of strange because people have like full-on community here if you're from Benedictine, or especially if you're from Steubenville. If you graduated from one of those two small Catholic colleges, you are swimming in people you went to college with. TACers just aren't very well represented in Denver. We're, you know, we kind of stick around West Coast, East Coast, and we just haven't really gravitated this way. I mean, there's a small contingent, but I don't run into people on a regular basis. I mean, I have a couple people I run into. Irene O'Brien, who I ran into last night. I run into a few people, but, you know, it's interesting. It's not like I end up... The average person who went to Steubenville in Denver is like sitting in mass, and they look across and they can see all kinds of people that went to the same college as them that they know. At this big old packed church yesterday, there was like five of us. And I was sitting, there was like four of us sitting right next to each other. So that was kind of cool. So we hung out a little bit afterwards and kind of caught up a little bit. And it was kind of, this was good. It's just nice. It's just a nice moment. There's a pretty funny moment in mass. There's a there really isn't a TAC Steubenville, rivalry. The real rivalry is actually between like TAC and Christendom. I think, I don't know. We were never really super conscious of it, but I've been told that there's a rivalry there. I do remember a very funny story, involving the Midday Report and a prank played on Christendom, which we will not remind everybody of in case people get, not allowed back on campus again. I was not involved in said prank, for the record. Anyway, so I was sitting next to Ducky, and they played some praise and worship song, and Ducky, my boy Ducky's just like singing his heart out, and I'm like, dude, he's just like singing the heck out of this song. And he looks at me after, he goes, yeah, it's an old school Steubenville song, you know. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. So then another song played I hadn't heard later, and he's just singing the heck out of that. And I look at him, I'm like, old school Steubenville song? He's like, yeah. So then they've been doing some of the mass parts in Latin at Our Lady of Lourdes for Lent. And so then it rolls around to the Sanctus, you know, and we chanted the Sanctus in Gregorian chant in Latin, that normal kind of chant you always hear with the Sanctus. And then we were kneeling down for the consecration, and I looked over at Ducky, and I'm like, yeah, that was an old school TAC song, you know. We both got the giggles. So, you know, it's good to poke at each other a little bit. So hung out with some TAC peeps after Mass a little bit, then headed down to Roaming Buffalo. You know, I haven't been to Roaming Buffalo in a while, and I'm going to say – The fatty brisket sliced has gotten better, I think. I mean, the brisket is just on point. And I've heard a few people around Denver that tried Roaming Buffalo at some point, and it wasn't good or something. They had some problem with it. They got something else. Okay, I'm telling you, if you're listening to me and you're in Denver, Colorado, or you're going through Denver, Colorado, go to Roaming Buffalo Barbecue, South Downing. I don't care what side you get. The mac and cheese is sick. They have a smoked baked potato with pecan butter. I don't care. It's all good. Fine. There's other meats are good. The Colorado lamb shoulder's good. I liked it. I got some of that. But, I mean, get moist, you know, fatty brisket sliced. Just don't think of getting anything else. Just make sure you get that. Don't swap it out. No. Fatty brisket slice. It's like Texas, dude. It's like such good brisket. I sent a friend of mine a video of me cutting the brisket like with the edge of like a really crappy fork. It's like it's so moist. It's so good. So big fat shout out to Roaming Buffalo Barbecue. Finally, after forgetting my gear and then working yesterday and then getting stuck here working on stuff until way after I was supposed to be gone, I took a friend to a doctor's appointment, and then I went to Theology on Tap. So Theology on Tap last night, I guess they had a last minute switch out, and the lovely and talented Frollo, that's right, Father Michael O'Loughlin, Father O'Loughlin Frollo from Hopromogo, from Holy Protection of the Mother of God Byzantine Catholic Church, the single longest name. I think it's Our Lady of Extended Monikers. Pray for us. So Holy Protection of the Mother of God Byzantine Catholic Church is his church. And so Father Michael O'Loughlin was doing his talk, and he's just straight up preached. It was like a long, solid version of one of his homilies, and I love his homilies. And it was packed out. And the main thing I wanted to go in good Byzantine tradition, I want to say wisdom, be attentive. Hey, over here, you know, which, by the way, sidebar, so funny. I was listening to the Forgotten Road Radio podcast, which I don't know if I've mentioned that. If I haven't, shout out to Lane and Sage Scott and the Forgotten Road Radio podcast. So good. Super silly cocktail party kind of vibe, but with like really deep, interesting conversation and ideas. Anyway, Sage pointed out the same thing that I noticed when I went to the Byzantine church. It's like, it's made for ADD people, because you're like starting to think about something else and then something important's coming up, and then they go, wisdom, be attentive. Like, hey, over here, look at my eyes. Hey, are you paying attention? Come here, back here. Okay, good. It's like it's pedagogical. It's like wrangling third graders, which is what mass is for the most part, if you're a priest. Anyway, so in true Byzantine fashion, based on his theology on Tap Talk last night, I want to say, wisdom, be attentive. Hey, look what happened. Look at this. Sure enough, here's Father Michael O'Loughlin. And he's got the typical kind of like full-on Catholic crowd in Denver out. But every time Father Michael does theology on tap, people from Jelly, all the like tattooed hipster girls from Jelly, where he eats breakfast all the time, come out. These are people who ideologically disagree with Father Michael, most likely, or in some of them not, maybe, in a fairly deep way. They love Father Michael. They come out and listen to him preach because it's Father Michael, because he has earned the right to be heard. These guys in his cigar club, he's in a cigar club, totally non-Catholic dudes, not on the team. They always come. He always reserves a table. Cigar club guys, Jelly club, Jelly girls always come. And so I saw, oh, shout out to Amanda from Jelly. I saw Amanda last night. I love Amanda. She's such a sweet spirit. She's so cool. So it's just, I just love that Father Michael, and I mean, Father Michael's kind of the chaplain of Calyx, basically. He sits in on our board meetings and stuff. I don't even know. He's probably going to end up actually on the advisory board or something. But he and I have been pondering the takeover of the world via coffee for some time. But he lives this thing that I talk about all the time with hospitality and about engaging the unchurched and just being a normal human being that lives out your life and in ways that you're not inside the bubble. Father Michael O'Loughlin lives that out in a huge way. And I tell you why it works. He told a story last night, because he's part of the Catholic Stuff You Should Know podcast, which has a couple more listeners than me. You know, shout out to the biggest Catholic podcast on planet Earth, I think. Okay, they got a couple listeners. You know, I have a couple listeners. So we both have a couple listeners. But, okay, I'm jealous of his numbers. But they asked people to tell him like what they like about each one of them or something. And the people said that he can find something beautiful in everything. And I think that's the key, man. Being able to see the true, the good, and the beautiful wherever you look. If you see God shot through an existence, you're going to be attractive to people. And, I think that's what Father Michael O'Loughlin does, and I think that's why he ends up with a bunch of people that are not in the Catholic bubble hanging out at a theology on tap at an Irish pub. Maybe we should learn that from apply it to our churches, apply it to our businesses or something, apply it to our projects in the Catholic world. All right, that was not planned to be that was supposed to be a one segment, so I'm running behind here, so I got to figure out. I got a couple of ideas I want to play out here. So I want to talk a little bit about politics. I know I hate it too. I just want to look at the big picture a little bit, point a few things out. And then I want to move on. I want to talk about Plato's Allegory of the Cave a little bit. A friend of mine did a theology on Tap Talk. I just happened to be reading The Republic at the same time. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Palm Sunday. All right, listen, it's Counterposition. We'll be right back.
Then how we crave a hanging in the dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing, please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to the Counter Position. I am your up way too early to be communicating with anyone host, Andrew Whaley. And, all right, so the weekend recap got extended to two segments because I got all hard on my sleevey, you know. Oh, rock me, Las Acacias. That's so good. Oh, I love you, Jason Farrar. Let's talk about politics. All right, Syria. I'm so confused by this whole Syrian thing. I heard an interview, so it's like, it's so easy to go, okay, dropping bombs, bad. That's bad, okay. Trump's a big bloviating idiot, and he's blowing people up. How could that possibly not be something we want to mock and hate? Okay, I'm with you. I'm there. Hey, Russia is propping these guys up. I mean, yeah, chemical weapons, bad. They've done it before, and we didn't do anything about it. Now, Obama threatened, you know, if you come over this red line, you know, there's a red line. I'm going to draw a line to sand. You know, that was my Obama kind of – I just did a random Obama, and it kind of turned into Bill Clinton there almost. The end there. I'm going to draw a line in the sand right there. You don't cross it. No, but Obama drew a line and said, drew a red line and said, you cross this. And then to his credit, you won't hear me do it very often. I'm going to give a high five to Mr. Obama. He shot his mouth off and said, if you go over this red line, I'm not going to do it. And then he went to Congress and said, hey, can I do it? And they said, no. And he went, okay, I'm not going to do it. Now, that's because he kind of wanted the support. He wanted the cover, the political cover. I don't think it was really he gave too much of a damn about the constitutional limits on military action or whatever. But so you may ask yourself, why can all these presidents keep doing all this stuff and blowing all this stuff up and fighting all these people and nobody's going to Congress and declaring war? How is shooting 59 Tomahawk missiles off of an air carrier, a battle carrier or whatever it is out in the middle of the Mediterranean, in blowing up a military airbase, how was that not an act of war? And why do you not need to go to Congress? Well, see, remember back when George Bush was like passing that preemptive strike thing in the name of fighting terrorism and just moving so much power over to the executive branch. And some of us Ron Paul libertarian types are over here going, Hey, we're moving a lot of power over in the executive branch. And everybody went, oh, you're being not a conservative. You got to be a conservative. Like, I'm trying to be a conservative. I read the Constitution and this little thing called checks and balances. Now you got to be a conservative. It's Bush. It's Republicans can do anything they want. You're not a conservative. Okay. And so, and then Obama got in for 8 years. And he said, hey, I'm in the executive branch. People are used to them moving power over in the executive branch. I think I'm going to keep moving power over there. And Trump got in, and what's he done? First 100 days. Hey, let's knock out executive orders and blow crap up. It's like Congress not involved. Woo, buddy, executive branch. All right, but so basically, they're using this kind of, you can do what you want. They're kind of abusing this kind of like fighting Al-Qaeda and terrorism in a vague term, preemptive strike, kind of a, you don't have to go, you can act quick to not go to the Congress kind of a thing they passed. I don't remember what the stupid thing's called. It was a long time ago, and it was about Al-Qaeda. And so now here's a sovereign state, such as it is, that did something really horrible to their own people. But ironically, they're fighting the people. They're fighting terrorists too there. So they're like the enemy of my enemy, but they're both kind of my enemy. It's like, I'm not any fan of Bashar al-Assad. The guy's a horrible human being and a tyrant. But there's all kinds of people, like Kim Jong-il, we'll go get the Korea in a second. All these people are doing, all kinds of people do bad stuff to their people and we don't do anything. I don't know what was going on. So then it gets even more interesting because on one side I see some military, some like lay expert military analysis of this. And they're like, okay, they didn't do anything. Tomahawk missiles didn't do anything. There was nothing there to blow up except some old planes. We let Russia know in advance and they got them to move everything out. And then we didn't, we could have brought B-52s over and like bombed that thing back into the Stone Age. But instead we lobbed some Tomahawk missiles at it. And they were flying airplanes out of that same. We didn't even hit the airstrip. We didn't hit their defenses. It was kind of like there's an argument out there that's like this was just a body check. This was just a shot over the bow. This was just a, it was for show. They didn't do anything. They didn't cause any real damage, any ramifications or anything, you know? And then, but then on the other side, I see, I heard on NPR, they're like interviewing this guy in Syria and he's all teed up to be like, this is horrible, you know? And he's like, yeah, it's like actually brought some hope in Syria. We've just been getting our heads handed to us and just completely just like, hey, we keep thinking, when is the world going to wake up and see what's happening to us? It's, you know, thank God someone finally did something and they're like, it's like, so, I mean, there's a guy that's been suffering on the ground in Syria because of the Assad regime. And he's like going, thank God the West finally woke up and care. And they showed they care about us in any way. And he's talking about 59 Tomahawk missiles that Donald Trump dumped onto this, this air base in retaliation to this chemical attack. So, I said that all to say that I have achieved Socratic wisdom on this whole Middle East conflict, and that is I don't understand it. I don't know anything about it, and I know that I don't. So there's the Socratic wisdom in that. Speaking of the Middle East, my God, Egypt. I mean, two Coptic churches blown up by ISIS in the middle of divine liturgy. I mean, I don't know what is more scandalous. The tragedy of such absolute hatred and violence and just evil. Or I don't know about you, and I've talked about this before, but maybe the real crime, the real travesty is just how unaffected I am by that. I saw images of a beautiful church blown all to hell with literally blood all over the place. And I was just like, yeah, there's another one of those images of violence like over there. These are people that like I go to a Byzantine church half the time. These people are praying a really similar liturgy to what I pray. These are Christian people. These are people that are, not only are they Christian people, they're Christian people that, I mean, I have something in common with. And it's bouncing off me. I can't, I'm getting numb to this. I don't know what to do. It's funny. It's like, do you bury your head and not see the images over and over again on the TV so you can feel it when it happens? Or I don't know what you do. Or I think it's just the same unsettled kind of numb thing that kept me driving around all weekend looking for some place to stop and work has got me unable to be affected by that. But that's just, I mean, I'm just pointing to it and going, that's nuts. Oh my God, that's horrible. But I don't know why I'm not doubled over in tears over the weekend hearing about that. Why am I not just like bawling that people went to Palm Sunday and little kids got blown up? Because we've just seen so much violence that it's almost turned into like, I have literally caught myself confusing news and a movie in my mind, in my memory sometimes. It's like, we just see it. It's just happening. We're starting to get numb to it. At least I am. Anyway, Gorsuch was put in, sworn in. So we got a good, solid, seems like a conservative 5-4 majority back on the Supreme Court. I hate that I want to break it down right, left like that. But when there's one of the two sides, quote unquote, is wanting wholesale slaughter of innocent children and wanting to like redefine the human person and with the whole like transgender thing and wanting to like vote for crushing small businesses. Oh, I'm going to skip over. I was going to talk about North Korea a little bit, but, and my note says,
about Syria and North Korea. Policy? We don't need no stinking policy. I mean, I don't think he has a policy. But
so I heard this over the weekend. I love listening to NPR. I listen to NPR because I can't stand the shouting idiots on conservative talk radio. And I like the mental exercise of parsing and seeing, picking out the presuppositions and the subtleties in the way that they report things on NPR. And so here's what they said. What are some of the cases that are coming up soon that could be affected by Gorsuch? And they said, well, you know, this and this and that. And whether or not businesses, people who own businesses can claim religious liberty, are able to refuse service to homosexuals based on their religion. Now, here's the thing. No one's arguing for that. No one had a wedding. No one had a cake baking or a bakery or something and said, no, I'll not make you some cookies. I won't make you a birthday cake because you're gay. No one did that. No one said, I won't cater your bar mitzvah. I won't make you a plate of meatballs for your birthday party. It was gay weddings. And the religious objection to what we think marriage is, right? Next thing you know, it's like, well, I don't do marriage. I don't cater weddings if there's like five people getting married together in a big group. Well, then you're a bigot. Well, that doesn't match. Well, it doesn't matter what it matches. They didn't say it. That's just such subtle little wording on these things you got to watch because it seeps in. That's how we've changed our position on all this in the last 10 years. All right, let's go to the break. When we get back, I want to talk about Plato's Allegory of the Cave and Palm Sunday. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Then all the color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to save. Love bedecked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely, and I'm dull.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your drinking coffee so that I can be slightly coherent host, Andrew Whaley. Columbia Las Acacias. All right, so Plato's Allegory of the Cave. So I was reading The Republic a little bit over the weekend, and then my friend, Dr. Megan Corin, had done a theology on tap. For my other friend, Father Nick Blaha, out in Emporia, Kansas. And so I started listening, and she was talking about Plato's Allegory of the Cave in relationship to education. And it got me thinking about something. So this is supposed to be its own segment. I actually have a whole segment of Plato and then a whole segment of Palm Sunday. You're going to get 6 minutes of Plato, 6 minutes of Palm Sunday, and then we're going to go home. You ready? Okay, break. Watch me. I'm watching the timer. All right. So Plato's Allegory of the Cave. If you haven't heard it, if you don't know what I'm talking about, I'm going to give you the quick, super quick rundown. All right. So there's these dudes living under the ground, and they're chained in a way that they can only look forward. They can't turn around and see what's behind them. They can only look at this wall. And then there's a fire casting light on this wall, and people move like shapes and puppets and stuff back and forth. And when they speak, the sound is made in this cave to echo off the wall that they're seeing. So they move these puppets, and the sounds coming from the wall. And these guys think this is reality. Basically, in the ancient world, he's tried to set up as best as possible kind of a movie theater, right? And then he says, if someone should free him, if someone should come and free them. Now, I think it's important to see that the freeing comes from the outside. I think that's almost a pointing towards both grace and the movement of the Holy Spirit, but also education in the art and the role and the calling of the pedagogue. So if someone should, you know, come down and untie them and lead them out, right, into the light, and they would see, and it's interesting, it's like at first they couldn't really handle it, right? They'd have to go look at like images and water and kind of like reflections and then kind of just see things, and then they might be able to like look up to the light and really experience the light. It'd be too bright for them, which corresponds to a lot of his view of reality and this thing called the divided line. But he says if he goes back in, somebody goes back in the cave because he makes pity on these people, and he goes back in and he tries to like tell them, hey, that's not real. Come on, let's go. They're going to fight him, and they're going to even like kill him because they're going to be like, you're crazy. This is reality. This is all we've ever known. These are the things move across the wall. They talk. Hello. You know, now here's what I was wanting to talk about. Plato is using this as an allegory for our relationship to the realm of sense experience, right? So he talks about images and reflections in water, and then the next closer thing to reality is the realm of sense experience. Then you go across this thing called the divided line to the realm, to the objects of mathematical thought. And then for him, there's this thing called the true forms. These are the things that underlie everything, right? And then the form of the good is the top, kind of like, and that's the sun shining down, so to speak, right? So he's using this as an analogy. He doesn't think anyone is actually experiencing anything, you know, that is artificial. Right now, Aristotle tells the same story, and I've told this before. People living in a cave in a well-lit area, and they have everything they need to be happy, and they have all these beautiful things, but they're all artifacts. They've never seen anything that wasn't made, basically. Right? Michael Wallstein told this story. It's in Cicero. It's a fragment of one of Aristotle's dialogues. And they break out and they go and they see the things themselves. So all this is a movement from the artificial in the made to the natural in the given, right? Well, here's the thing is that it just dawned on me that, my God, we are in the cave. We're not in the cave like in the way that we view reality in natural things in the realm of sense experience. We are literally in the cave. We view the world through screens. We view the world through very technical, very high class versions of puppets being moved in front of fire. We think we don't view reality directly. We view it through the lens of screens. We watch TV. We see movies. We constantly have our face in our phones. I was at Roaming Buffalo trying to eat my brisket. There's some dude watching YouTube videos. He's by himself eating on a Sunday right after Mass. He's by himself eating, and he's got his phone out on speakerphone at a table in a restaurant just watching YouTube videos. Just didn't care if anybody else could hear. He's in his own little reality, and he has to be feeding himself. He's got beautiful food and real people on a gorgeous afternoon on a Sunday, and he has to accompany himself with these YouTube videos, you know? But, and so it dawns on me that, like, literally, we have, you know, look at your typical, like, your teenage boy in a dark basement, in the dark, staring at a screen, either playing violent video games or looking at porn. We literally need to come down into his cave, pull him out of the cave, take him outside, and the starting place to just get him back to where Plato was trying to talk about would be, okay, here's real physical activity. You were shooting arrows in this World of Warcraft game. Here's a bow and arrow. Now we have to talk about, what is your relationship to this? What is violence? What is skill? Why should you take time with targets? I mean, you know, learn to shoot well. I mean, all these things you have to relate to reality. Here's a real woman. Here's a real grown, beautiful woman right here. Now he still has to figure out how to relate to that reality and how that you know, that she's a person and all that stuff. But we have to get him out of the cave first and get him back into relating to the real world. Like they really, we literally have kids are growing up in the cave. They're in a subterranean chamber in the dark staring at a screen. It's just like a just blinding flash of the obvious. It just kind of hit me. Anyway, so let's get the kids out of the cave, man. Take them outside. Say, hey, go. Here's a real ball. Throw it. Here's sunlight. Get some vitamin D. She's pretty. She's a person. Look, person right there. Human being. Yeah, we should do that. All right, so that was 8 minutes. All right, Palm Sunday. I only have one little quick thing to think about on Palm Sunday. All right, so Palm Sunday, we get all these palms, and we bless these palms, and then we do the whole thing where we stand, and it's this huge, long gospel, and there's all these different people reading, and we get to play the role of the bad guys. We get to play the role of the people going, crucify him. No, give us Barabbas. You know, and it's like every time it happens, I'm like, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to yell, crucify him. I do all the time on my actions, right? But here's the thing is that it just dawned on me with the palm thing. Is that, so this is Passover, Jerusalem. I mean, there's like a million or more, millions of people show up for this. Like, this is like a ton of people. That's the reason why Herod and Pontius Pilate and all these people are worried about there being insurrection and kind of like a riot or something. This place, the old city, I mean, it's bursting with at the seams. Like, this is a town that just like goes to like 20 times capacity for a few days, right? There's a lot of crowds, right? And so the same people that are there kind of visiting, here comes Jesus riding in on a donkey, and they're throwing palm branches down in front of him and hailing him as a king. Like he enters Jerusalem triumphant, like in a military parade, like when Caesar comes back into Rome or something. It's like he's being hailed as the Messiah. He is the conquering king entering his city, and he's being hailed, and they're throwing these palm branches down in front of him. It was this act of worship, this act of like, yeah, pledging that what he is, you know? And these are the same people that a few days later are saying, crucify him, right? Well, I got this palm in my hand and I'm sitting there and it just dawns on me. I put my palm in my car afterwards and some people are like making them into little crosses. I go home, put mine behind my grandpa VJ's crucifix on my wall. And I'm like, yeah, that's us, right? We have these moments where we feel so close to God and we're like, yeah, woo, you're, I give you my allegiance. I acknowledge who you are. Here, I'm going to take this thing and throw it down in front of you. I'm going to cast my garment down. I'm going to throw these palm branches. I'm going to drop my knee to the dirt and hail you as king. You are the Messiah. You have right authority over me and over my life. And then just moments sometimes later, I mean, we get to see Peter go through the whole process and like deny him 3 times. You know, I guess that's the thing is that if you ever start thinking about being a success, you know, Jesus chose 12. I mean, one of them was his finance guy was stealing the whole time and then betrayed him. His leader, the guy that he was like grooming to take his spot, you know, the rock, Peter, denies him 3 times. Everyone else except John and his mom like take off when he gets killed. So if you're feeling like a failure at that point, you know, our Lord out of 12, run the numbers on that. All right. We're out of time. You're listening to Counterposition. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode. Thanks for coming out.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.